Welcome back. Sue Ellsperman is the 50th lieutenant governor in the history of Indiana, the third woman, the second woman engineer to have been a lieutenant governor. She is a proud graduate of Purdue. She was raised down in Ferdinand, Indiana, way down south in the southwestern part of our state. And she, not only is she an engineer, she worked in the automotive industry. She worked at one time at Frito-Lay's. Now I know where the Doritos came from. I got it there. And she's had experience as an industrial engineer working with companies and then got into politics and now is the lieutenant governor of the sovereign state of Indiana. Sue Ellsperman, welcome.
Well, thank you, Amos. Very happy to be here today.
What does the experiences that you had in business help in this wide range of responsibilities that Indiana lieutenant governors now have? It's almost like you do more than the gov does.
It's a big enough job. But actually, the common denominator is problem solving. And really, my PhD is in unstructured problem solving. And what that means, mm-hmm. it's all those messy problems out there that don't have a single right answer, but you got to figure out how to improve it or how to create something new. And that is a very transferable skill to state government.
Just before you came in, we heard from a mom that was having problems with an apartment complex with an alleged manager who was just, you know, just racist, allegedly. But they were talking about the kids and were waiting for the school bus, and they got their laptops and their got apps on there that the school didn't add. And some of these kids were figuring out how to work around it. And I said, wait a minute, if these kids have figured out how to work around security on a laptop or an iPad, those kids need to be sentenced to some honors courses. Those are kids that have some aptitude with STEM, that science, technology, engineering, and math, that we are not doing a good job of encouraging more Hoosier youngsters, not just all Hoosier youngsters, but particularly African-American Hoosier youngsters.
Yeah, and you know, and in fact, in some of our Project Lead the Way classes, app development is one of the things we try to have our kids in high school do, because as you say, they have a natural interest in those kind of areas, and it is STEM related, and we want our young people to go into those technology careers. So you're right, anywhere we can hook their natural interests into the sciences and technology, we want to do it, but we don't do that well enough yet. We need to keep working it.
Is that one of the things the governor and you are going to be doing with these workforce councils, these workplace councils? I know some of the focus was on vocational, but what you're talking about is if a kid wants to build an app, if they want to work with computers, that's vocational, but that's also science, engineering, and that kind of stuff.
Well, there's two pieces to that.
Right.
The Works Councils really are trying to match our students with the needs of the region and its workforce, the employers, mm-hmm. because we don't do a very good job today of if Indianapolis needs 500 engineers or 1,000 technicians, electrical technicians, we don't have any really way of knowing that, and then we don't carefully match the high school VOTEC career and technical education and the college readiness to those needs of employers. And the Works Councils really are intended to align our high schools to the kind of careers that mm-hmm. our regions need, and each recognizing that each region of our state has different needs. As you mentioned, I come from southern Indiana. Down there, we're woodworking capital. Mm. So the kinds of jobs we have in some of our craftsman-style woodworking, some of it is manufacturing work. You know, it looks a little different than what we might see here in Marion County right. or in northwest Indiana, where the steel mills are dominant. So it's really looking at what do our employers need? What are those good jobs of the future that we want our kids to have the opportunity to pursue? But if they don't know what they are and our high schools aren't developing curricula that aligns with that, the probability of them staying here, which is probably a concern you and I share about brain drain, mm-hmm. that we keep our best and brightest in the state to the extent that we have opportunities for them.
We're with Sue Ellsperman, the lieutenant governor of Indiana. You may have a question for her, 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. One of the traditions I've learned about Indiana lieutenant governors is once the state senate leaves town, and you finish presiding over the state senate, lieutenant governors get the heck out the state capitol themselves and go out in the real world. You've been starting to tour Yeah. Some of the counties you're calling it like a listen kind of tour thing?
Listen and learn tour.
What are you learning?
A lot. I'm telling you, Amos, I'm learning terms about what the state house is called in other parts of the state. Most of them I can repeat, maybe not all of them. But you know, no.
Is it frustration that they want, that people out in the real world in Indiana is like, why can't y'all do something that affects my life?
Well, I tell you, growing up 3 hours south of here, I completely understand the feeling that my Northwest Indiana, Northeast Indiana colleagues have, where we feel like Indianapolis and the State House really isn't hearing us. Mm-hmm. It feels like, and I know this is hard for you to imagine, but it feels like everything is done for Indy and the donut counties.
Right.
Versus if you're further out, you wonder, do they really know who we are and what our challenges are? So
what are some of those challenges? Because one of the things that I always want my audience and this community to understand is sometimes the frustrations we have, and this, the legislature doesn't listen to us, they're always picking on us, are the same frustrations that you'll hear northwest, northeast, southwest, southeast.
To a great extent, you're absolutely right. Things like, allow us to have local control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with education, if there's schools, there's a lot of the rural areas where their schools are doing perfectly fine, doing very well, high graduation rates, and yet we're imposing what it feels like we're imposing more rules on them and ways of operating. So they all want us to, be it state or federal government, please reduce the regulations, the rules, allow us more local control.
You mentioned education. I know you've been out the last couple of weeks. Have you gotten any feedback from people on this I-STEP mess?
You know, not so much. Certainly have heard. We've had a number of school board members in our governmental, the elected official sessions. And, you know, they're concerned more about making sure that we continue to help support, fund education so that the kids can be successful. But didn't hear. Now, I am married to an educator, actually the assistant principal of Forest Park High School down in southern Indiana, who is in charge of all the I-STEPs and placement exams for the school. So I don't underestimate. That was a challenge for our schools this year. And I know that our superintendent of public instruction, Glenda Ritz, is on that. And boy, you know, we don't need to have any extra hassles this time of the year as school years are trying to be completed and other exams as well trying to be completed.
With the Lieutenant Governor Sue Ellsperman, whenever I've had the privilege of having a Lieutenant Governor on the program, I always want them to talk about agriculture. That's one of the major responsibilities that our Lieutenant Governor has. And, you know, Hoosiers need to understand that's a multi-billion dollar industry for our state. And last year was not good because we had the drought. This year, there's like rain everywhere.
Well, you know, if there's one thing you know about the weather, you can't really predict it. But, the most recent economic impact study done by IU said it's a $38 billion industry of impact to the state of Indiana. So that's huge. And last year, you know, absolutely was a drought. Now, most farmers had insurance, crop insurance of some sort, unless you were a livestock producer. So some came out okay. This spring, actually, believe it or not, we're almost on track with the land being planted out there. You know, when I'm up those roads in my tour, my 92-county tour, I'm watching, I'm kind of counting how many tractors are out in the fields. But we're basically on track, though we are a little wetter, appears wetter. I think maybe we lost sight of what water looked like last year.
Because of your engineering background, your background working with companies, sometimes people don't understand when they hear agriculture, they think, okay, that's the job of the farmer. That's the job in the meat packer. That's the job that takes the corn and turns it into corn on the cob. And puts it in a can or freezes it up. And they don't realize that there's a lot of employment opportunities in agriculture and minorities don't necessarily look at that. And that's a growing area.
It really is. It's all the way from the seed development hybrid, the genetics.
Mm-hmm.
So think about genetics, chemistry, biochemistry, all those that would go into a Dow AgriSciences or a Beck Hybrids, all the work on that front end, all the way through to the farm. And what's amazing on a farm today is it's very high tech. And being in a combine last fall looked nothing like what I remembered from high school days.
These are those big tractor things that cost $300. When I was in, worked for 4-H way, way back when I was very young. You know, they showed me a combine and they said, that's $100,000. I can't fathom how much they are today. My Lord.
And GPS and
there's a GPS?
Oh, there's
they can tell you where the bug is?
Well, they almost operate themselves. There's very little human interaction needed. But the technology is so improved. So there's technology there. Precision farming, which is another thing where you use sensors and imaging to know how your crops are doing, all the way to, as you talked about, food processing. We think, boy, in Indiana, we could do so much more with value-added food processing at the end. So, yeah, the careers, again, I call them STEM because they start with biology and chemistry and all the way through engineering and all the way through logistics at the end. And I would love to. One of our goals is to attract many, many more Hoosiers into that broad new definition of agriculture. FFA certainly is leading the way, and you might be interested to know that our urban schools are getting very interested in FFA, and we're opening up more chapters in our urban schools than ever before. And
listeners may not realize that, because I know ever since the FFA national headquarters has been here in Indianapolis, I know Philadelphia, St. Louis, we're talking inner city schools, have FFA chapters. And when you see the convention downtown, there are actually African-American and Latino youngsters in those blue jackets as part of the delegates, and have even risen to leadership positions in the national FFA. But this is something that we need to get. I heard that there's an FFA chapter at Tech in IPS.
Yes. And, you know, we want to continue to. If you've been around that organization, it's not only is it great for agriculture, it's great at developing leaders. Mm-hmm. So it's a great opportunity for our young people. Even in our traditional rural schools, less than half of the membership comes off of a farm. So in all ways, we have a lot of educating of our young folks to do, be you urban, suburban, or rural, in what agriculture really is.
She's the Lieutenant Governor of Indiana, Sue Ellsberman. We'll take a break when we come back. They keep giving Lieutenant Governors things to do, and we'll talk about how the Lieutenant Governor and all this extra money that we got from the federal government is not sequestered to make sure that Hoosiers stay in their homes. Also, somebody gave the Lieutenant Governor something new to do. The Office of Defense. What is this? The Office of Defense Development. It sounds serious, but we'll ask her about that, as well as with Memorial Day coming up and the events with the tragedy that occurred in London on yesterday. Plus, we haven't had tornadoes, thank goodness, come through Indiana like they normally do, but they could come, and that's Homeland Security. That's part of – she got a big portfolio. I think she's the one that does all the work, and the governor just – is around in the pickup truck. Anyway, it's the Lieutenant Governor. We'll have our conversation with her when we return. We're back with the Lieutenant Governor of Indiana, Sue Ellsberg. And I know the Governor Pence talked with the Governor of Oklahoma. Have you talked to your counterpart in Oklahoma?
I've left him messages, and my chief of staff similarly, to just let him know that Hoosiers were really thinking and praying for them, and that we stand ready to assist if we can. And I know our Department of Homeland Security also has is ready to assist when asked.
Is this also something where our folks here will look at what happened in Oklahoma response and see, do we have to tweak our plan?
We do. And as you know, the Lieutenant Governor serves as secretary or chairperson of the CTASC, our counterterrorism task force. We looked after the Boston tragedy, we debriefed that carefully as we prepared for Indy 500, and we will do the same, I'm sure, with the things we're seeing here, so that we will continue to integrate new information. But it is, these natural disaster tragedies just break your heart.
Yes, they do. What is this Office of Defense Development? It just gave you something new.
Well, that was something the governor and I had talked about quite a bit on the during our time together during the campaign, recognizing that, again, I'm from southern Indiana, where we have one of the Navy's third largest naval base, NSA Crane, located there with over 6,000 primarily high-tech jobs which, number one, protect our warfighter. They do electronic warfare and radars and
so
sensors.
This is what keeps the enemy from seeing that our planes are coming and that we got surprises for the bad guys.
Absolutely. Very, very important to our military. In addition, of course, to Indiana, it's 6,000 really good jobs that if we were to lose that base, and we do know, we're already in sequestration.
Right.
We know that a BRAC will happen. It's really which year will it happen. And Crane's been on that chopping block two or three times in the past. And so we're being proactive to say we need to protect the assets we have that are here for serving our military, our nation's defense, but also the Office of Defense Development will go beyond that to look at trying to attract more industry, defense-related industry to Indiana because we're such a good place to do work. And there's a lot of innovation that resides at Crane, intellectual property that can be created into commercial applications and new jobs in Indiana.
So similar to what former Mayor Goldsmith did when the Defense Department wanted to take Naval Avionics out and they cut that deal with Raytheon, and Raytheon, you know, is out there at Naval Avionics doing stuff they you know about, but I'm not supposed to know about it. but important stuff, you know, for our armed forces, similar things similar to that.
Well, and
that kind
I
of
wasn't
public,
around
that kind of public
there, but there's a lot of, are you talking about the intellectual property? Yeah there is a lot of, and I'll use an example. Synthetic skin is one where our Ball State students actually worked on that. It was developed at Crane for ballistic testing, you know, for missiles. But think about how that could be helpful if you've got a medical school and you want to teach doctors how to do surgery. So that's the commercial side of how do we take the things that they're developing at Crane and turn those into real products for the commercial world, just like NASA did with Tang.
Right.
It's the same idea. And how do we do that and make jobs in Indiana for Hoosiers?
One of your aides is trying to figure out what was Tang. 239-13. No, that was not a character on Sesame Street. 239-1310. 239-1310. Let me go to Greg with the Lieutenant Governor. Hi, Greg.
How you doing today? How you doing, Lieutenant Governor?
Hi, Greg.
I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
The governor signed that bill that took away, gave the mayor more power. What was your opinion about that?
Yeah, you know, my understanding of the bill is that came out of the mayor's office. And, you know, I don't think the governor thought it was a perfect bill either. It, you know, probably we can all talk about what would have been perfect there. But at the end of the day, good governance, trying to respect the needs of the local government there, and trying to continue to refine that Unigov concept as it moved forward. So, you know, I think that's one of those bills that, you know, there's different folks look at it in different ways. And I certainly know that the at-large positions maybe were some of the concerns. I think some of the additional oversight that it gave the mayor was helpful in running the kind of enterprise he has to run in Marion County. But those at-large positions were a bit of the controversy.
I appreciate it, Greg. Should we look at, because you mentioned earlier the frustration that people in other parts of the state feel, Indianapolis gets everything, we don't ever get anything, as well as Hoosier's natural tendency to I don't want big government, whether that's big Indianapolis government, big city county council government, big such a, you know, Hawthorne County government telling me what to do. And the reason I say this is we used to not be a state that allowed people to vote and make the final decisions. We usually left everything in the hands of the legislature. After the property tax crisis, the legislature allowed local communities, okay, you want to raise your tax at the school level, you want to raise your tax at the county level, take it to the people, and that seems to be working. Some of them win, some of them lose. Is this something where maybe the big government in Indianapolis needs to look at allowing Hoosiers to do more of that?
You're talking about state government?
Yes, state governments. Yeah, tell the locals, okay, we kind of like this idea. If this is what you guys want, you know, we'll approve it subject to a vote of the people in your community.
Well, and I think that's part of the purpose of the 92-county tour that we're doing right now to get out and meet with counties is to bubble those ideas where they would like the state to give more local control and option on how they want to organize. You know, we have at least a study committee this summer for Allen County that would like to look at one elected official versus three commissioners.
Right.
So I think those are the kind of things that we're trying to feel out. How you ever get that exactly right, I'm sure we'll never find the perfect balance there. But local communities are different. If there's one thing I'm learning on my 92-county tour, every county is different.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, you know, Marion being just the best example of a large, and then here I'm going to a lot of rural counties of 30,000, 40,000 people, and they have a whole different set of challenges. And they just ask, state, can you be our partner? Don't be heavy-handed on us, but give us some options.
And I tell our audience all the time, in fact, the Census Bureau this morning released new population estimates for cities and towns in Indiana. What we were noticing is cities aren't shrinking the way they were maybe 5 or 10 years ago, and things are kind of stabilizing out. Some of the larger quote-unquote cities in Indiana grew a little bit. But when you look at the top 10 cities, you got Indianapolis at 900 and something, and then you got Fort Wayne at about 254, beautiful Evansville now at 120. They're growing. Yay. South Bend at 100. But then when you get down to number 10, which is Muncie, 70,000. And then and the rest in that 70 and 80,000. If you live in a town of 900,000, that's a small town. But if you live in a very, very small town of 300, Carmel's a big city. But it's not big compared to other places in the country. This is a state of smaller communities.
It is. And, you know, I think that is one of the beauties. You know, one of my passions is to make sure that in our smaller communities, they thrive. And we've not had that same growth. Where we may be growing a smidge by population, we're getting older.
Mm-hmm.
Which means we have fewer young adults, means our schools are shrinking, which means all those changes we make to that school funding formula, funding following the child, makes it harder to keep your schools opened and providing the services. So there are unique challenges when you're not growing.
And Hoosiers don't like school consolidation.
No. I come from those areas where they're still talking about the high schools that were closed in the 60s and 70s.
239-1310, let me go to Ron with Lieutenant Governor. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Lieutenant Governor. I think where Illinois just passed medical marijuana, and I know that there were some people in our legislature that was interested in some or decriminalization and some maybe medical marijuana. How does that stand now with this governor and what's going on?
Well, I think we're still Hoosiers over here. The last count, I think Indiana just landed 21 companies out of Illinois last year. We're probably not at that place. We, you know, Hoosiers are still very conservative, and we want to keep drugs out of our schools, away from our kids, et cetera. And I'm just not sure that we're going to be moving down that path soon. And, you know, people as legislators, they can introduce any legislation that they want to bring before the General Assembly, and that's part of the freedom a legislator has.
All right, appreciate it. 239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's name is you're also dealing with tourism, and all these states around us, they got all this money. We got balanced budget, we got budget surplus, and we only have like $1.25 to advertise tourism against all these other states that got gazillions of dollars. What is the administration's view on how aggressive Indiana needs to be in tourism to all of these great attractions that we have in our state? And they're not just here in Indianapolis.
You know, you have an industrial engineer sitting here who believes it's not always about money. It's mm-hmm. about how you leverage it,
mm-hmm.
what we do with it. And our Department of Tourism Development, which I'm very proud to that reports through my office, is doing a great job of doing the heavy lifting right now to brand Indiana,
mm-hmm.
make sure that as we do advertise, we're doing it in a cost-effective way, and that we work with local agencies and CVBs to make that message as strong as it can be and done in a very cost-effective manner. Because I think it's also hard to go back to Hoosier taxpayers and say, I want to spend $10, $20, $30 million to advertise tourism. Hoosiers are practical people, and we want to support and grow tourism. I think we can do that very effectively with our partnering approach. And, you know, Indiana is really known for our P3s, those public-private partnerships, and really being the lead there. And I think that's the approach we're taking with tourism as well.
Your predecessor was very aggressive in the midst of the recession and the housing crisis in working like the Dickens to keep Hoosiers in your homes. We got some extra federal money. How's that program working?
By that hardest hit fund, I tell you what, the U.S. Treasury entrusted us with a little over $200 million mm-hmm. to bring here. We would like to get it spent faster. We would like to get it in hands of Hoosiers faster. So over the last couple months, we have revisited the guidelines, have been able, with their okay, with U.S. Treasury's okay, broaden the eligibility and the amount that people can be eligible for. So we can include now, if you're a veteran, if you had a medical emergency that was unforeseen, in addition to the amount, up to $30,000 per home. You don't have to be just unemployed now if you were unemployed as a result of the recession. The eligibility is much better. And I encourage anyone out there listening that thinks, you know, their home is vulnerable to foreclosure, please reach out to our program, the 1-877-GET-HOPE. Please reach out, because we want that money to go to Hoosiers. We think we can help over 10,000 Hoosier families retain their home or transition into a home that they can afford long term.
This week, obviously, here in Marion County, you know, a lot of people didn't even know we had a land bank. But land banks do exist, not just in Marion County, but in other parts mm-hmm. of the state. Given the negative publicity that occurred with this alleged sin that occurred in the Indianapolis Land Bank, is the administration concerned that, and I know this is a legislative study committee that's going to look at it, to look at best practices to make sure that the alleged sins that occurred here in Marion County aren't occurring in any of the other counties that have land banks? Because the whole idea, if somebody's not using, has abandoned a house or property that can be used to redevelop an older neighborhood, we ought to be able to do that. And if nonprofits or CDCs can do that efficiently and help build neighborhoods and not profit themselves or flip it and give money to somebody to take it to Mississippi somewhere. Is that something the administration is concerned about?
Well, you know, I think certainly good governance is something we all are concerned about, whether you're Democrat or Republican. We as Hoosiers have very low tolerance of bad things happening under our watch. And so, yes, I think we need to look at best practices. And of course, we'll look in our own agencies for making sure that we don't leave the door open for those kinds of things to occur. I will link back to say that, you know, those neighborhood revitalization remains a top priority in many communities across our state, large and small, because we as Hoosiers want our communities to look good. We want to have good housing stock. We want to have good places for people to live. So, you know, unfortunately, bad actors happen and bad things, and as you said, still alleged. So we don't know what the outcome, but we should always try to have the best processes and procedures put in place. And that's been one of the adjustments I've had coming into state government, coming out of the private sector after so many years. You know, I'm appreciating just the need that we have for transparency, for mm-hmm. making sure we have strong processes and methods that just ensure that the public can trust what we're doing.
One of the things you talked about earlier, getting our young people to stay in Indiana, do we need to start looking at incentives? In other words, okay, if you go to school in Indiana and you get a degree, and you're nervous about leaving school with this huge debt that you owe somebody, well, if you agree to take your skills to an older neighborhood, whether it's in an Indianapolis or a Fort Wayne or an Evansville, or you agree to take your skills down to Ferdinand in Indiana or to Vive or what have you, and be willing to live and stay, it's almost like urban homesteading or rural homesteading was way, way back in the day. And if you do that, we'll chop off a whole lot of your student. We have to start getting more creative in providing those options.
I think yes, that's an option, but I also think we need to make sure that our communities are places that our young people want to be. One of the changes we're seeing demographically, and I won't assume what age you are, Amos. I'll just say my generation, we went where the job was. This new generation is likely to go where they want to be and mm-hmm. then go find a job. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud of Indianapolis and what this area has done to be the fourth most attractive city in the country for young professionals. Mm-hmm. I'm using that as an example in my rural communities to say if Indianapolis can do it, and we weren't there 40 years ago, but we're there today. So mm-hmm. kudos to this city for the good things that they've done to be a good place for young talent to want to live. So I think that's part of what we have to own first, as well as I agree with you that we may want to look at what are the other things we can do to encourage our young people to look here as opposed to looking outward. We also have to be competitive with what we pay. We lose, from some of our engineering schools, we're losing more than half across borders, and that's a shame when we've paid as taxpayers and parents both to put them through that degree.
So
and
we
then
have to not
to
be
Indiana.
A state on the cheap, and that doesn't mean waste money.
No, but that means that's private sector. That means we've got to have the kinds of jobs, those innovation-based jobs, high-tech jobs that can pay well, because that working with your back in a traditional factory of the past is not going to be the 20, $30 an hour kind of job that we want to sustain families. So we've got to be very looking forward to what kind of jobs we need to have out there.
What's been the biggest surprise or biggest thing unexpected in these first almost 6 months now on the job?
That's a good one. You know, This was actually one of my big surprises coming in as lieutenant governor, and it's going to sound like a backhanded compliment, and it's not intended to be. But coming from 3 hours away, I wasn't always sure how good our state employees were. Mm. I've had such a great experience with the agencies that I've worked with, and my own and others, of just really dedicated people coming into work every day, trying to do their best. And I always think there's room for improvement when it comes to customer service and making sure that the Hoosier on the other end of the phone feels that they're getting the best service possible. Right. But, you know, I saw that as a very positive thing because, again, 3 hours away, we don't always feel the love on the other side and a great appreciation.
Speaking of that, I know up here, I-69 is kind of like, we got to do that. But down your way, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
How is that first two sections of the highway going?
Beautiful. Can I tell you, it was like the highlight of my life to get to MC the ribbon cutting with Governor Daniels last fall when we opened it up. When I was, when I was 15, we opened up I-64, and I got to march in the marching band on I-64 and see that. Now, many years later.
A
few years later.
But this is a big deal.
It's a big deal. We're that area, one of my last projects before I left the University of Southern Indiana, was to help conceptualize that as an innovation corridor along I-69, where we would attract high-tech companies because Cranes, right in the middle of it, Evansville at the other end, and soon to be Bloomington and Indianapolis at our other end. So great opportunities there. And I can just say it's already cut off almost 30 minutes, just half completed. Yeah. I can't imagine when the whole thing's completed.
And the governor said this week he's going to finish it and will not be a toll road. It's going to be a freeway.
Well, our commitment is it's going to get built, and I think that is the plan. And we have some work to do. We got to make sure we've got the dollars, and Hoosiers are doing their part. They're going to work where our tax revenues are strong.
It's going up. Yeah,
they're strong. So bar another crisis, we're on our way to having I-69 completed.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you in your first appearance on the program. We know it will not be the last. We know we'll see it at State Fair.
Well,
and probably at Indiana Black Expo?
Well, I don't know if Black Expo is in my calendar, but I will tell you, if it's not in there this year, I'll get in there next year, and we'll make sure that I'm there.
See, that means if it's not in her calendar, that means the governor's there, because that's the thing, this little switch-off thing that they do. Sue Elsberman, Ph.D., industrial engineer, and also the 50th Lieutenant Governor of the great state of Indiana. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much, Amos.